Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. In this hour, crime, later on an episode of The Whisperer from 1951. But first, Dragnet is on the air with the story The Big Lift, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast from April 27th, 1954.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
Dragnet.
You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to forgery division, shoplifting detail. An organized gang of thieves has started operating in your city. In spite of the precautions taken, the thieves are still working. Your job? Stop them.
It was Monday, September 20th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of forgery division, shoplift detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Chief of Detectives Thad Brown. My name's Friday. We were on our way out from the office, and it was 9:45 a.m. when we got to the 8th floor of the Whitfield Department Store. Security office.
Yes, sir, can I help you?
We'd like to see Mr. Dunlop. I believe he's expecting you.
Your name?
Joe Friday.
Oh, yes. You want to go right in?
Thank you.
Thanks, ma'am.
This door here?
Yes, go right in.
Come on in.
Hi, Jerry. You know Frank, don't you?
Sure, how's it going?
Hi, Jerry.
You boys want to sit down?
Thank you.
I'll have the girl sent up.
Okay.
Yes, sir?
You want to have Miss Evans sent up, please?
Miss Evans, yes, sir.
I'd like to ask you guys a favor.
What's that, Jerry?
Poor kid thinks this whole thing is her fault. I'd appreciate it if you could take it easy on her.
Well, we'll do our best.
Sure.
What'd they get away with this time?
Oh, here's a list.
Thank you.
Here's a copy for you, Frank.
Oh, thanks.
You got any idea when they were in?
It's hard to tell for sure. We're open Friday night, and then Saturday's a pretty rough day. It wasn't until after closing we found it. I figured they either moved in late Friday night or early Saturday morning.
Miss Evans' girl discovered the theft, did she?
No, she didn't know anything about it. The stock clerk found it. He was running through the inventory to replace the coats and suits. Noticed there were several that couldn't be accounted for. He called me.
Mm-hmm.
Evans' girl's in the department. I talked to her this morning. It looks like she waited on the pair.
She able to come up with any kind of description?
Yeah, I think she'll be able to help us. Oh, excuse me. Yes?
Miss Evans is here.
Oh, send her in, please.
Yes, sir.
Come in.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Dunlop?
Yes, would you come in, please?
Yes, sir.
Oh, Miss Evans, this is Sergeant Friday and Officer Smith. They're from the police department.
How are you doing, ma'am?
Hello. I don't know why you want to see me, Mr. Dunlop. I told you I didn't know anything about them. I told you. You've got to believe me. I didn't have anything to do with them. I never saw them before.
Now, you just sit down, Miss Evans.
Thank you.
Now, the officers are here to just talk to you. They want to ask you a couple of questions. There's nothing wrong.
You mean I'm not going to lose my job?
No.
Really? You're not going to fire me?
We never even considered it.
I don't know how to thank you. My first job and to have a thing like this happen. I sure appreciate it. Anything you want to know, I'll tell you. You just ask, I'll tell you.
All right, Miss Evans. Have you any idea who might have stolen the merchandise?
Well, didn't you tell them what I said, Mr. Dunlop?
Well, I thought it would be better if they heard it from you.
Oh, I see. Well, I think I know who they were. I've tried to remember all the people I waited on, everyone. There's only two that stand out, like they were different.
How do you mean different, miss?
Well, they didn't seem like the other customers. You know, like they really wanted to buy something.
Yeah.
They just wanted to look around. I could tell they didn't really want to take anything with them. We had a course on that in school, how to tell if a customer really wanted to buy.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the class problems, to sell a customer who didn't really want to buy anything.
Yes, ma'am. About these people, what was it they did that makes you think they might have been the shoplifters?
Well, first, the way they talked. I was trying to wait on other people at the same time, and they kept me showing them all kinds of things. It took me almost a half an hour to clean up after they left.
There were two people, is that right?
Yeah, a man and a woman.
Can you give us a description of them?
I told Mr. Dunlop all about it. You want me to go over it again?
I've got it, Joe. I'm having it typed for you now.
All right, fine.
You want me to tell it again?
Well, we'll check it with you. Yes, ma'am.
What kind of things these people want to see, ma'am?
Oh, just about everything at the counter. They had me so mixed up, I didn't know what to do. I told you I was trying to wait on another customer. Woman who wanted to buy a suit, I kept trying to take care of her. She finally left. These two were causing so much trouble. Every time I left them, I couldn't even take care of the woman. She got mad and left. I don't really blame her. You know, Mr. Dunlop, there really should be more people up there. Only three girls, and when we get busy, there just aren't enough to go around. Lots of customers walk out.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll see what we can do.
Lots of times they walk out without buying something because there isn't anybody to help them.
Mm-hmm.
This woman who walked out, could you describe her for us?
You bet. She was real nice. Had a lot of patience. Kept waiting for me to go back and take care of the troublemakers. Never said a word.
Well, can you tell us what she looked like?
Well, I'd say she was about 35. It's hard to say for sure. She took real good care of herself. You know, hair all nice and good makeup. Not cheap, like. Nice hands and a manicure.
Was she carrying any packages when she came in, do you remember?
Gee, I gotta think about that. I don't think so. Oh, you know, a couple of paper bags, like from the notions department. Maybe face cream or cologne, things like that.
No large boxes?
No. I don't see why you're so interested in her. The other two were the ones who caused the trouble. They're the ones who must have taken things. Why are you asking about the lady?
How was she dressed, do you remember?
Oh, just beautifully. Had on a gray suit with large lapels. Kind of peplum that came out like this. Rhinestone buttons, beautifully good taste.
She wearing a coat?
Mm-hmm. Long. Had a stand-up collar, real full skirt, tight bodice.
Where was she looking at the suits?
Over by the counter. She'd hold them up, you know, in front of the mirror. She knew what she wanted. Looked at the material, the way they were made. She'd have bought if I could have spent a little time with her. She liked the merchandise, liked everything I showed her.
Mm-hmm. How many things did you take off the racks for?
I guess she looked at a dozen styles. You know, a dozen real high-style suits. That seemed to be all she was interested in. You don't think she had anything to do with it stealing, though, do you?
Well, looks like she was the one who did the actual taking of the merchandise. The other two were there to keep you busy.
I can't believe that. She was so nice. Never seemed to get upset, even when I couldn't spend more time with her. Real nice. Didn't get upset at all when she couldn't find what she wanted.
I'm afraid you're wrong there.
Hmm?
She found it. We continued to interrogate the witness. We got complete descriptions of the trio. Their physical appearance and their method of operation matched those of the gang Frank and I had been looking for the past 6 weeks. Alice Evans was shown mug shots of known shoplifters, but she was not able to give us an identification. We made arrangements for her to come down to the office and check additional mug files. The average citizen looks at shoplifting as a petty nuisance, which businessmen are expected to endure. It's not entirely true. Shoplifting is big business. Last year, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of merchandise was stolen from stores in the Los Angeles area alone. Most of the goods stolen by organized gangs is sold to fences for final disposal. During the course of our investigation, we've been working with Stores Protective Association, incorporating all of the security officers in the larger businesses. MO bulletins had been gotten out on the gang's activities. From what we've been able to find out, there were three people working as a unit, two women and a man. The three suspects would enter a store and split up. One of the women would pretend to be looking at merchandise, while the other two suspects would engage the clerk in conversation, in that way keeping her away from the first member of the trio. The articles stolen were almost always either coats or suits, and we noticed that one line of merchandise seemed to attract the criminals more than others. Monday, 3:46 p.m. Frank and I went down to a secondhand clothing store on 5th Street to talk to the owner.
Be right with you.
Toby?
Yeah. Hi, fellas. What's going on?
Oh, we got some things we want to talk to you about, Toby.
Sure, just having a cup of coffee in the back. Come on, I'll pour you a cup.
Fine, thank you. In here?
Yeah, sit down. Get you some gather.
Thanks.
Anything special?
No, we're just fishing, Toby. Thought you might be able to come up with a little something for us, maybe.
And here you go. Either of you want sugar?
No, no.
No, thanks. Don't use it.
Just doing part of your work here.
Is that right?
Yeah, buy sheets. Want to get in the mail tonight.
Well, we don't want to keep you, Toby.
Yeah, no trouble, Sergeant. Mac's getting a little tired anyway. Just soon stop and have a cigarette.
How's business? Pretty good?
I'm keeping up. Now, what can I do for you?
You got anything on a boosting gang working around?
Nothing more than usual. Why?
Well, we got a bunch that's giving us a little trouble. We're trying to come up with something that'll hang together on them.
Two men and a woman?
Yeah. You got anything on them?
Oh, nothing worth repeating. Rumbled around about the three of them. That's about it. If I had any more, I'd have called you sooner.
Where's the information coming from?
Well, you know how it is, Sergeant. You hear something here, something else there. You put them together, you come up with a story, but no way to trace it.
Yeah, I know. You got any idea where the stuff is being sold?
Same answer. Rumble's got it that all the loot's being shipped out of town. Some of it back east, some goes up north. I got a piece the other day that some of it's going to Mexico.
Mexico, huh?
Yeah. Most of it's ending up in the east, though.
You know any reason they'd be hitting one brand more than the others?
You got a word, that's about all.
What's that?
The gang's laying it out around town that they'll pay up to $25 for a suit. You know, going price is around five, maybe six and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Figures that if you can do better with one line, that's what you're going to boost.
Huh. Why has the price gone up?
Yeah, the only way I can figure it is that they're worth more on the market.
Anybody approached you?
Yeah, if they had, you'd have been called right away. You know that.
Yeah.
You got any idea we might be able to pick up anything on the trio?
Not right out, but I'll tell you one thing.
What's that?
Oh, yeah, I got it. There's four of them.
Yeah?
Two men, two women. A man's a gun. He sets up the deals, makes the shipments.
How are they getting the stuff out, Toby? Do you know?
Pick up a kid and offer him a trip. Ask him to deliver a suitcase. Works out good for him. Carrier doesn't know who he's working for. Can't lead the cops back to the operation.
Mm-hmm.
About the only way I can figure it. You say none of the stolen stuff showing up down here?
Mm-hmm, nothing so far.
Well, thanks a lot, Toby. If you hear anything, we'd sure appreciate a call.
Sure thing. Oh, hang on a minute. Yes, sir? What can I do for you?
Buy used clothes?
Yes, sir. What have you got to sell?
That's in the car. I just want to be sure you're buying stuff.
Well, bring it in. We'll take a look at it.
Okay, Toby. We'll see you later, huh?
Right, Sergeant. Give me a call.
Right.
I'll be right back. Excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, what do you think of that, Sergeant? Sure in a hurry, isn't he?
Yeah, let's see why. Come on.
Yeah.
You see him?
Yeah. Right up there.
Hey, hold it up there.
Huh? What do you want?
What's the matter? Didn't you hear me? I asked you to wait back there.
Well, sure, I heard you. I didn't know you were talking to me. What do you want?
Police officer. You want to step over to the car? I want to ask you a couple questions.
Well, I haven't done anything.
We didn't say you did.
Well, why do you want to talk to me? What do you want me to come
on, let's go.
All right. You're making a mistake. I haven't done anything.
Mm-hmm. All right. Get in. All right, sit still.
What are you doing? You won't find anything. I don't know what you guys are after. I haven't done anything.
Take your wallet out.
Why?
Take it out.
Here.
Take the money out of it. You always carry that much money, do you?
No, not always.
I know. You keep the money in your hand. Give me the wallet.
Here you are.
Is your true name?
Hmm?
Kenneth Elgin Norris. Is your right name?
Yeah.
You live here now, do you?
No, not now.
Where do you live?
I got a room over on 7th.
You want me to run a make on him?
Yeah, will you?
Here. Here's his ID.
Thanks. 1K80 to Control 1. 1K80 to Control 1.
Control 1 to 1K80. Go ahead.
Check for want. Kenneth Elgin Norris. That's N-O-R-R-I-S. Male, white American, 26 years, 5 feet 10 and 3 quarters, 168 pounds, black hair, brown eyes. KMA 367.
1K80, Roger, stand by.
What's all that about?
Checking to see if you're wanted any place.
Oh.
You ever been in trouble?
Me with the cops?
That's right.
No, never.
Why'd you leave the clothing store in such a hurry?
I remembered I had to meet a guy. I remembered I was late.
Who's the guy?
A friend of mine. You wouldn't know him.
Well, try it.
It's a guy named Arthur. I don't know his last name.
Where were you going to meet him?
A bar down the street.
What about the clothes you wanted to sell?
What about them?
Where are they?
I don't know.
Well, you went in to sell something that you didn't have, is that it?
Well, I was going to pick them up from Arthur.
And you don't know his last name?
No.
How come you were going to sell the clothes?
Huh?
Why were you going to sell the clothes?
Well, that's a silly question. Why does anybody sell anything? Because I needed the money.
You look like you're sitting pretty good.
Well, I got to leave town. I'm selling all my stuff.
I thought you said the clothes belong to this Arthur guy.
Well, they do, but I'm going to sell them for him. He said he'd give me a piece of the profit.
Why doesn't he sell them himself?
Well, I don't know. You better ask him.
We'll try to. Now get the rest of the stuff out of your pocket. Come on, everything.
You guys are making a big mistake. You know that, don't you? A real big mistake.
Well, if we're wrong, we'll tell you.
Yeah. Here it is. Comb, change, cigarettes, and a lighter. That's all there is.
You sure?
Well, why would I lie?
Turn your pockets inside out.
What?
Turn them inside out.
All right.
All of them. The other one, too.
Told you, I gave everything I had. There isn't anything else.
Oh. What's that?
Huh?
Move your foot. What's this?
Looks like a key.
What's it for?
Well, I don't know. It isn't mine.
Well, maybe it belongs to Arthur.
It could be. It isn't mine.
Looks like a check locker key, doesn't it?
It might be. I never saw it before.
Came out of your pocket, didn't it?
No, it didn't. It must have been on the floor all the time. It isn't mine.
1K80. The suspect has a felony record, including burglary, and is now wanted for parole violation.
1K80, Roger. KMA 367. Thought you said you'd never been in trouble.
I made a mistake.
Looks like you made more than one, doesn't it?
What?
Maybe you're wrong about the locker key.
I told you, I never saw it before.
Oh, sure. You want to sit with him, Frank?
Yeah.
I'll get to a phone.
Right. It's just a key. What does that prove?
I don't know. Let's find out what it opens. We got the location of the locker, and with the suspect, Frank and I drove over and removed a large black suitcase. The locks on the case had been broken, and inside we found 11 women's suits of the same type that had been stolen from the Los Angeles stores. All identifying labels had been removed, but we were able to find the tag issued by the National Recovery Board inside the seams of the suits. We got in touch with their Los Angeles office, and they told us that the serial number had been issued to a San Francisco company. On the way back to the city hall, we stopped and searched the suspect's room thoroughly, but we found nothing. When we got to the squad room, Frank went to the business office to arrange a phone call to San Francisco, and I took the suspect to the interrogation room. 6:20 p.m.
You guys got to believe me. That stuff's not mine. I don't know where it came from.
Where'd you get the key?
Well, it's not mine. I never saw it before.
That's kind of hard to buy.
Well, I don't care if you want it or not. That's the way it is.
Tell us a little more about this, Arthur, will you?
I told you everything I know.
Where'd you meet him?
In a bar down on Main. I told you that before. Now, what's the matter? Don't you believe me?
You're making it tough to believe.
I'm telling you the truth.
Where'd the suits come from?
I don't know.
Right here. Take another look at them. Might help you remember, huh?
They were in the suitcase when Arthur gave them to me. That's all I know.
Where'd he get them?
I don't know.
Did he steal them?
Well, I don't know.
Why'd he give them to you?
He just said he wanted me to take care
of
them.
You told us before he wanted you to sell them, didn't you?
Well, he did.
Where were you going to make the payoff after they were sold?
He said he'd get in touch with
me. Where?
Around. He said he'd find me.
He gave you over $500 worth of suits, and he said he'd get in touch with you, huh?
That's right.
When?
Sometime.
He didn't name a date?
No, just said he'd look me up.
How many times have you been arrested?
You got the record. Why asking me?
We want you to tell us.
I don't know. I forget.
We'll take a guess.
Oh, a few times.
Five?
You got the record.
When's the last time you checked with your parole officer?
I forget.
You know your package is tabbed?
No, I didn't know until I heard it on the radio.
You had no idea, huh?
No.
You went up for burglary, is that right?
Yeah, they sent me up to the joint.
You know you're going back, don't you?
Yeah, I guess.
Not going to look good to have another charge marked on you.
What do you mean?
Burglary.
How'd you dig that one up?
These suits. If you can't explain them, it isn't going to look too good, is it?
Look, I told you, Arthur gave them to me.
And he said he'd get in touch with you.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure.
Come up with the answers yet?
Says he doesn't know them.
Yeah? Maybe we can help.
Hmm?
Just got through talking with a Georgia writer up north.
Yeah.
He checked the records. Code numbers from a shipment to the Whitfield department store. Looks like the bunch we're after.
Now, who's Arthur?
You mean the suits were stolen?
You called it. Who's Arthur?
Look, I don't want to go back to the joint in a beef like this.
We don't decide that.
But if I help you guys, you'll take care of me. You'll talk to my parole officer.
We can't make any deals with you.
Yeah, but I don't want to fall this way.
That's up to you, mister. You're sitting in the middle. Now, which way do you want to go?
Nobody can help you but yourself.
This Arthur must be a fine friend, leaving you with a bunch of stolen merchandise.
Might be the way he figured it. What's the matter? Doesn't Arthur like you?
Okay, I'll go the route.
No.
I'll tell you where to find him.
We called a stenographer, and Kenneth Norris gave us a complete statement. He said that he'd been approached by a man that he knew only as Arthur and asked to carry a suitcase to St. Louis. Once there, a man would have him paged at the airport and take the valise from him. In return for this service, the suspect was to be paid $100 and his expenses. Norris explained that he decided he could do better by selling the contents of the suitcase himself. This information was forwarded to the St. Louis Police Department. We got a complete description of the man he knew as Arthur and had the suspect check through the mug books, but he was unable to make an identification. We got in touch with his parole officer and told him that we had Norris in custody. We asked that we be allowed to detain him for a few days. The following morning, we met with Chief Detective Thad Brown and Captain Welsh. It was decided that Norris would take us to the bar where he'd met the thief and he'd point him out. Norris would then be brought back to the main jail and booked, and I would try to establish myself with this Arthur. In that way, we'd have a better chance of building a case that we could take to court and apprehending the entire shoplifting gang. On Wednesday morning, September 22nd, Norris, Frank, and I drove over to Main Street. We checked the bar, but the suspect wasn't there. We waited in our car, which was parked down the street. Arthur failed to arrive. He didn't show up at the bar on Thursday or Friday. Saturday, 12:40 p.m., Norris pointed down the street.
There, that's him just going in the place.
Fellow in the gray suit there?
Yeah, that's him.
You sure?
I got no reason to lie, have I?
All right, Frank.
Yeah.
You want to take Norris back to the office? I'll go on in.
Okay. I'll be right back.
All right.
Sergeant?
Yeah.
I'll give you something for free.
Yeah, what's that?
Take it easy with Arthur. Don't press.
How do you mean that?
He's a pretty rough guy.
That's so?
Yeah, I hear he carries a gun. Be a lot of trouble if he's got it with him.
Not unless he tries to use it. I left Frank at the curb and walked into the bar. I saw the man that we knew as Arthur sitting at the rear of the place. I took a seat near the front door and ordered a cup of coffee. In a few minutes, I walked back toward Arthur.
Something you want?
Yeah, I wondered if I could have one of your cigarettes there.
There's a machine up front.
Well, if I had the price, I'd have bought a pack coming in.
All right. Here.
Got a match?
How you fixed for Brett?
Look, I just asked you for a cigarette. If you don't want to give me one, say so and I'll shove off.
Never mind. Here's your match.
Thank you.
Hey, you.
Yeah.
You're broke, huh?
All the way.
Just got in town?
This morning.
Where from?
Up north.
Narrow it down.
Look, mister, here's your cigarette bag. Give me one of these. Doesn't entitle you to my life story.
You hungry?
I haven't eaten for 2 days. Thanks. Appreciate this.
How long are you going to be in town?
Well, it depends on how things work out.
You got a job?
Well, I'm going to look.
What do you do?
Whatever pays.
Tell you what.
Yeah?
I got some friends around town. Might be able to use you. Check with me in a couple of days. Might be able to do something for you.
Well, how do I get in touch with you?
Meet me here. I tag the place a couple times a week. Just ask if Arthur's around.
What's your name?
It's what I'm using this season. You look me up, kid. We'll work something out.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I sat and talked to Arthur for another half hour. During that time, he wouldn't tell me his last name, and I had no way of finding out anything more about him. At 12:10, I saw Frank drive by the front door. That was the signal that the crew of detectives were standing by to follow the suspect. I left the bar and walked down Main Street up to 7th. Frank was waiting for me. We drove back to the city hall and discussed what had happened with Chief Brown and Captain Welsh. During the next 3 days, Arthur was kept under constant surveillance. He didn't drive an automobile. He contacted no one. We were able to learn a considerable amount about the man. Although he didn't try to make contact with any other members of the gang, it was obvious that he was the prime fence and that he was directing the operation. Wednesday afternoon, I walked into the bar on Main Street. Arthur wasn't there, but the bartender said that he was expecting him. I waited. At 6:47 p.m., the suspect entered the place. He took a seat at the rear of the bar and motioned me back. Hi, I've been looking for you.
You're right.
Yeah, wonder if you've been able to come up with that job you were talking about. I could sure use a touch.
You like to travel?
What?
I think it might have something for you. You got to go out of town, though.
For dough?
I wouldn't ask you any other way.
Well, what do I have to do?
A friend of mine has a suitcase he wants delivered to a party in Chicago.
Why didn't he send it by mail?
Doesn't want it to go that way. He wants it delivered personally.
Well, what's it pay?
All your expenses and $100.
Well, what's in the suitcase?
That isn't any of your business.
Well, what happens if I get picked up? I don't know. I'm not carrying anything hot.
You got to take my word for it, Gene.
All right. Who do I deliver the suitcase to?
I'll meet you in the morning. I'll give you the bag then. You catch the 10 o'clock plane. When you land at Chicago, go to the coffee shop. You'll be paged. Meet the man and give him the suitcase.
Well, how do I know if it's the right guy?
We'll give you the name. He's the only one who knows what the name is and when you're coming in.
All right. Where do I meet you?
Be out in front of this place at 8 in the morning. I'll pick you up.
Just one more thing. How about the money?
You won't need any going back. When you turn over the suitcase to my friend, he'll give you the 100. You already have your ticket.
Sounds okay. Not as permanent as I'd like.
You carry this off, we'll be able to do more business.
Well, I'll meet you here then at 8 in the morning, is that right?
Right. Be on time. I don't want you to miss that plane. A lot depends on this deal. I don't want anything to go wrong.
No, don't worry.
What?
Neither do I. I left the bar and met Frank. We stood by the front of the place, and at 9:56 p.m., the suspect came out. He called a cab, and we followed him. We went out to the apartment where we knew he lived. Frank and I waited out front. At 11:20, a car pulled up in front of the place and three people got out. They matched the description of the thieves in our shoplifting operation. They were carrying a large suitcase. We waited for 10 minutes and then Frank and I went up to Arthur's apartment.
In a minute. What are you doing here?
What's this all about, Art?
Police officers, you're under arrest.
Stand still.
A cop, a lousy cop. Should have known. I thought I could trust you. I thought you were honest.
Yeah, you sure pick him. A cop for a messenger boy. You're real smart.
I thought I could depend on him. I thought he was honest.
You don't know what the word means.
How about it, mister?
Huh?
Do you?
Arthur Nelson Thompson, Samuel Donald Hickok, Georgia Baxter Nielsen, and Dorothy Marie Simpson were tried and convicted of burglary in the second degree, 14 counts. They received sentence as prescribed by law. Burglary in the second degree is punishable by imprisonment in the state penitentiary for a period not less than 1, nor more than 15 years.
You have just heard Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action, and starring Jack Webb, a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service.
Dragnet, on Tuned to Yesterday, from the 27th of April, 1954, an Armed Forces Radio Service rebroadcast of that NBC show. This is an hour of crime on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for a broadcast of The Whisperer, a replacement summer series for NBC. This first aired on September 16th, 1951.
Escape. Kill her. presenting The Whisperer, starring Carlton Young. The Whisperer, a brilliant man who, losing his voice in an accident which crushed his vocal cords, worked his way deep within the crime syndicate to help destroy it from within. To the underworld, his familiar rattling hiss is the voice of authority, to be obeyed without question. Then a miracle of surgery performed by Dr. Benjamin Lee restored his natural voice, enabling him to resume his real identity. Now, as Philip Gault, aggressive young attorney, he skirts the thin edges of death, living his dual role. For as the Whisperer, he sets in motion the forces of the syndicate in Central City. Then, as Philip Gault uses his knowledge to fight the organized network of crime which seeks to control the fate of millions in cities and towns across the nation. The only person besides Dr. Lee who knows the Whisperer's real identity is the doctor's nurse, Ellen Norris. Now she listens as Philip Gault, using his Whisperer's voice, reports back to his superiors in the syndicate.
Instructions given to Mendoza.
When he has completed the first part of his assignment, he will call you.
Where is she to be detained?
This information is being purposely withheld.
Now you're making war on women?
The syndicate makes war on anyone who gets in its way, Ellen. Step on one tentacle and the other seven converge and squeeze you to death.
Who's Patricia Folsom?
Wife of Barney Folsom, former syndicate trigger man.
Former trigger man?
Yes, he's marked for death. Come on, I'll tell you as we go. I purposely didn't tell Mendoza where Patricia Folsom lives because I want to get there first and take her to safety.
Can't you call her as a Whisperer and warn her?
She wouldn't believe it. And besides, she may have heard that her husband's orders always come from the Whisperer. If she has, she'd spot the double cross in a minute.
Why kidnap her?
Well, Barney Folsom is a killer, hoodlum, and hoppy. Unfortunately, he's a very handsome man. Like most, he's very vain. Last week, he was sent to San Francisco to do a rub-out for the syndicate. He met some little cutie and bungled the job. The little cutie identified him to the police, and so he has to die.
Well, if he stays undercover, won't he be safe?
No. Sooner or later, the police will pick him up. Then he'll be minus one daily ingredient, which he has to have.
Oh. When the craving comes, he'll talk his head off.
Yes, and that's why the syndicate has to kill him before the police find him.
Well, what did his wife do?
Well, she's the only thing Barney Folsom loves more than himself. When word gets around that she's being held, he'll show himself and...
And two more people die.
That's right. Barney deserves anything that comes his way. But I hear that his wife is a pretty regular woman who happens to love the wrong guy. It's happened before.
And it'll happen again. Bill, when are you going to get out of this horrible syndicate?
You know what happens to people who try that.
But you can't fool them forever.
Ellen, I'm in until they discover I double-cross them or until the people awaken to the danger and wipe it out.
Do you know Mendoza?
No. He's probably from out of town. He seems to know Patricia Folsom, and that makes his job easier. He slips into town, kills her husband and her if necessary, and grabs a train out of town, and 10 hours later he's in Cuba, New York, or even Europe.
Oh, Phil, step on it. I don't want that to happen if we can stop it. Yes?
Mrs. Folsom?
Yes?
I'm Philip Gault, and this is Miss Norris.
Hello, Mrs. Folsom. How do you do? Will you come in?
Thank you.
Please be seated. Now, what can I do for you?
Mrs. Folsom, I'm a lawyer.
Oh, am I in trouble?
I'm afraid you are.
And you're here to help me?
Yes.
I'm sorry you've wasted a trip, Mr. Gault. When I need your services, I will call you.
Close the door, Mrs. Folsom. Unless you want the neighbors to hear how your husband bungled a murder.
That's enough. I don't like the kind of life I lead. I don't like some of the things my husband does. But we're both several rungs above the slimiest creature that crawls on the earth. How much do you want?
Mrs. Folsom, we're not here to blackmail you.
No?
To save your life, if you'll listen.
I'll listen, but I won't answer questions.
All right. Suppose that recently a man, perhaps your husband, Barney Folsom, went out of town.
He did go out of town. His employer sent him on business.
Who was his employer, Mrs. Folsom?
The Cato Insurance Company.
As a lawyer, I happen to know that is a front for a network of organized crime known as the Syndicate.
You seem to know a lot of things, Mr. Gault.
I also know that this man was sent to do murder.
That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. Barney's no murderer.
That's beside the point. The Syndicate feels that he bungled the job and therefore has to die.
No. Surely you're wrong, Mr. Gault. Well, Barney doesn't let anyone run over him.
And you know what would happen if the police picked him up and kept him several days in solitary.
But he's tried so hard.
I know. The Syndicate intends to kidnap you and hold you until he tries to rescue you. And then...
Look, that's enough. What do you want me to do?
I want to hide you in a safe place.
Still, my apartment. No one would think of that.
That'll do nicely, Ellen. Then I want to get word through to the underworld for your husband to call a certain telephone number.
You can use mine.
He wouldn't do it. He'd suspect a trap.
Not if you gave Phil some little pet phrase that you call each other. If he heard that, he'd know the message had something to do with you.
Yes, that would do it. You must have a pet phrase we can use.
We do. Of course, it sounds silly to anyone else.
Never mind that. What is the phrase?
Love dumpling.
Love dumpling?
I said it sounds silly when anyone else says it. But to Bonnie and me, it has a very special meaning.
Oh, can't be helped. We'd better get moving, Mrs. Folsom. Believe me, the danger is very real and possibly very near.
I'll pack some things.
Ellen will loan you what you need. You take my car. I'll meet you later.
What are you going to do?
Stay here and get a look at...
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Now, don't argue. Get going now.
Phil, I don't want to leave you.
Please, Miss Norris. Let's do as he says. Suddenly, I'm very much afraid.
All right.
I'll call you later.
Hello, Pritchard.
Yes?
I'm looking for a friend of mine.
You must have the wrong apartment.
Wait. Another slam the door in my face.
Do I look like a friend named Patricia?
How do you know her name?
I don't, but you blurted it out when I opened the door.
This is apartment 308.
It is indeed, but I'm not your friend. In fact, the more I see of you, the less I like you. Now break it off before I learn to hate you.
Maybe my friend is inside. I'll look and see. Huh? Maybe in the closet, huh?
Do all your friends live in the woodwork?
Schmatzen.
I just moved in today.
You're a schmatzen.
Look, the people I subleased from said they had to leave town in a hurry.
I'm still a schmatzen.
What is this schmatzen business?
I'll explain it to you. When you meet one, there's only one cure for a schmatzen. And it goes like this.
Oh, no, you don't. Oh. Next time, forget the schmatzen and pay attention to your judo.
Schmatzen, I got a present for you when I get time.
Yes?
Ellen?
Are you all right?
Except that I'm a schmatzen.
A what?
Schmatzen. I'll tell you all about it later. Let me speak with Mrs. Folsom.
Just a sec. Hello, Mr. Galt.
Mrs. Folsom, where's the best place to drop the word for your husband to contact me?
Sarah Joe's. 16th Street and 54th Place.
Right.
Oh, just a minute. Ellen wants you. Phil, why do you want Barney Folsom to contact you?
To try and convince him that it's safer to give up to the police and face a charge of attempted murder. I think he'll do it to save his wife. Once the police have him, she's safe from the syndicate. I'll call you in an hour. Now, what does a man have to do to get a drink in this place?
Keep his tongue civil so he can live long enough to tell me what he wants. There's the list. Prices, too.
Yeah, Panther Punch, 30 cents. Carbolic Cocktail, 40 cents. Mickey Finn on the house. I'll have some Stratton Sour Mash with a jigger of Made of the Morning and soda.
Huh?
You don't have it.
I never even heard of it.
Oh, that's too bad. That's all I drink. But I do parlor tricks.
Yeah, what kind?
Give me a glass of water.
Okay. There.
Now, I take this $50 bill, fold it twice, place it on the bottom of the glass, and drink.
You nuts or something?
Now, with a little help from you, I can make that 50 stick to the bottom of the glass.
No.
And no one but you can get it off.
Well, let's try it. Helping Hand is my middle name.
All right. If Barney Folsom...
Pipe down. Pocket your 50 and blow.
Now, let me finish.
Mate, you just did, and I'll beat it before I heave you.
All right, but wrapped in this 50 is a telephone number. If a certain party calls it in 24 hours, the twin to this 50 will be in the mail.
I'm not saying anything, but supposing the gent in question gets a scuppers above water, who would he ask for?
Love dumpling.
What? Love dumpling? Love dumpling. Oh, that's rich. Love dumpling. Joe's place.
Joe, Mendoza, don't say nothing.
Yeah, okay, shoot.
There's a schmatzen at your bar. Tall, wavy hair. Dough written all over him.
Yeah.
I'm tailing him. If he asks you questions, give him answers.
Okay.
I'll match anything he gives you.
That's a deal. Where are you?
I'm in your back room. Give me a knock when he flies.
Well, now, matey, what was you saying?
Your attitude changed mighty sudden.
Oh, I've been thinking while I was listening.
Well, pass the word. Just pass the word.
All right, but I got a hunch you just threw away 5 sawbucks.
Joe.
Come in. Well, I haven't seen you in town for more than a year, man.
And you don't see me now.
Right.
Okay, Spill.
He lipped about Barney Folsom.
Barney?
Yeah.
Quick, late on the line. I can't let him get away.
Well, he left me this card in a 50 and promised another half to see if Barney calls Love Dumpling at Crandall 4213.
Give me that card.
Yeah.
Here's a C.
Well, he only gave me 50.
That extra 50 makes up for the one that Schmatzen won't live long enough to give to you.
Who is it?
Phil.
Oh. You're late. I was afraid something had happened.
It took longer than I expected.
Mr. Galt, any news of my husband?
Not unless someone called this number before I got here.
They didn't. I've been thinking about what you said, Mr. Galt, about Barney. If he's what you say he is, I didn't know it.
Well, I have no proof, Mrs. Folsom. Our job is to get him safely to the police, and from there on, it's up to them.
Thank you. I happen to love him.
And that works both ways. If the syndicate wouldn't use you as the bait to draw him out of hiding.
He'd do anything for me. And this time, I wish he wouldn't.
I'll get it. Hello?
Love Dumpling?
No, this is...
Then I'll be right up.
Wait! He hung up.
Was it Barney?
Yes, he said he'd be right up, so he must have called from somewhere in the building.
Are you sure it was Barney Folsom?
Positive. He asked for Love Dumpling.
It's Barney, all right. He's still alive. Oh, Mr. Galt, if we both talk to him, he'll see that it's best to give himself up and throw himself on the mercy of the court. Oh, he's here, safe at last.
Mrs. Folsom, let me...
Barney! Oh, Barney! Oh!
Take it easy, Pat. The rest of you get him up.
Mendoza.
That was a bad slip, Schmatzen.
Schmatzen?
I'll explain it to you sometime. Now, how did you know my name?
Well, I one time I saw your picture in the paper and I remember...
Oh, I see. Pat, keep your mouth shut and I'll take my hand away. Sorry I'm the one to do this. But if things were reversed, Barney would do the same to me.
Oh, no. Barney's not a killer.
Get wise, Pat. He's no good. Never has been. Never will be. Now, Schmatzen, you've played cute at the apartment. Too cute.
You admire me.
No, you're stupid. I tailed you and you didn't tumble.
From here, I can take it without prompting.
From here on, you'll take it, period. How do you tie into this deal?
I'm a lawyer.
But what do you want with Barney Folsom?
Oh, he's well known and... Well, I thought if he'd give himself up...
You'd defend him and grab off a slug of cash and a big slice of publicity. You ambulance chasers are all alike. You're all Schmatzens. All right, you want publicity, you'll get it. Turn around.
I'm fresh out of tricks. Looks like I do as you say.
Now you're showing your high IQ. You want to see Barney Folsom? Okay. I'll just make sure you'll be here when he phones.
Bill! Oh, no! Oh, you've killed him.
I assure you, it was purely intentional. Now, girls, take your last look at the body. You won't be seeing much of him anymore. Or, for that matter, anyone else.
Phil still lies without movement. A second hour, and then a third hour passes. And the door of the apartment is stealthily opened, and a man enters. Patiently, he sits, waiting for the first sign of life.
All right, snap out of it. I said snap out of it.
Who are you?
You sent for me, you ought to know.
Folsom?
Yeah. Now tell me what you've done with Pat or I'll cave in every rib you own.
I don't know where
she... Don't give me that.
You do that again and... You'll never find her.
I'll do it several times and you'll be glad to talk. Where'd you learn our pet name?
She told me. I'm Phil Gall, a lawyer. I heard the syndicate was going to kidnap her.
So I'd come out of hiding where they could rub me out, huh? All right, go on.
I sent her here, but Mendoza...
Mendoza? He's doing a job?
Yes.
He always liked Pat, but he'd kill her without batting an eye. Who's this friend you mentioned?
Ellen Norris. After Mendoza tapped me, he must have taken her, too.
Oh, that gives you a stake in this.
Yes.
All right, any ideas?
I can find where they're being held, but I'll have to make a call in private.
No, so.
You'll have to trust me.
Why should I? I'll give Joe a ring and find out myself. Joe knows me. I can trust him. Douse your head under that water cooler. You don't look so good.
Yeah.
Oh. Easy, you're no good if you're out on your feet.
Joe's place. Sailor Joe speaking.
Joe.
Barney?
Yeah. I got your message through the grapevine.
Where are you?
Dame's apartment. Friend in the telephone company tipped me to the address.
Did you get Mendoza?
No, he's got Pat. Where are they holding her?
They ain't tipped it yet, not till the trap is ready for you.
All right, I'll stay here till you call me.
Good.
Any luck?
None. Look, Gall, I've got no choice but to trust you. I'll wait outside the door, but don't try anything.
I won't. Ellen's involved in this, too. Operator, get me Circle 1798, New York City. I'll wait.
Ready on your New York call.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Central City.
Go ahead, Central City.
Mendoza has completed first part of assignment. I have been contacted by Barney Folsom. Where is his wife being held?
In the Maida Mist Flower Warehouse at 9th and Grace. Do not give Folsom this information for 1 hour. We will be ready for him by that time.
Girl?
Yes.
Where is she?
In the Maida Mist Flower Warehouse at 9th and Grace.
All right, give me that phone. Yeah. I know that joint. Offices in the front and the warehouse in the back. Yeah.
Joe's place. Sailor Joe speaking.
Joe, listen. I know where they're holding Pat.
Where?
I'm not saying yet. I need your help.
Just keep me clean. I'm your boy.
All right. Can you lay hands on a pulley that doesn't squeak in 150 feet of rope?
The pulley, yeah. The rope, no. But I got 60 feet in the back room.
All right, I'll make that do. Grab the rope and pulley and meet me at the corner of Marquette and Alvarado in half an hour. You're going with me.
I'll have the gear there, but going with you, I ain't.
All right. Half an hour. Feeling any better, Gold?
Yeah, a little.
All right, come on. I got a car downstairs. It's going to take both of us to get the girls out of that flower warehouse. Marquette and Alvarado Street.
And there's Joe.
Good. He brought the gear. Joe will do anything for money, as long as it's safe. And this is safe, the way I'll play it. Stow it in the back seat, Joe.
Yeah. This is heavy.
All right, now get in.
Hey, but I told you...
And I told you, get in.
Don't shoot.
I won't. You won't get hurt.
Well...
Joe?
Yeah?
Can you still climb a 50-foot rope hand over hand?
Might not get up, but I can go down it.
If you can, there's a sea in it for you.
Folsom, you're beginning to sound like Buck Rogers.
Wish I had his ray gun. I could use it about now.
Are you familiar with this warehouse?
Every inch. They'll hold the girls in the front part in one of the offices. They'll expect me from the front.
You have a different entrance picked out?
Sure.
What's with the rope and pulley?
The roof. They're watching the front. We surprise them from the rear.
But a 60-foot rope and a 50-foot roof? For that, you need 100 feet of rope.
You should have studied engineering instead of law. It's a matter of balance and counterbalance.
Oh.
Beginning to get the picture, Go?
Yes, yes. How many sacks of flour equal a little less than my weight?
Smart boy. Now, it's too bad I met you so late in your life.
A few minutes later, the black sedan parked in the dark of the warehouse. Three figures stole silently toward the back of the towering structure. Cautiously, they merged in the shadows and then began their ascent of the ladder which led to the roof. Careful prying and the skylight opened was quickly put aside. Across the huge beams, the pulley was fastened and the rope fed through it until one end rested on the dim floor of the warehouse.
She's down.
I tied a big knot in this end. Can't possibly slip through. Here, feel.
Yeah, that'll hold.
All right. Now let yourself down hand over hand. At the bottom, tie the slack around 4 100-pound sacks of flour.
Does he know which sacks are 100 pounds?
One, I loaded 1,000,000 pounds of flour. That's why I took up barkeeping.
All right, in you go, Joe. Now, take it easy. Give a tug when you're ready.
Yeah, I got you. Don't you make no noise while I'm down there.
Don't worry, we won't.
You may be wrong in your weights, Folsom. I weigh 195.
I tip at 215. With 400 pounds on the other end, we'll have 10 pounds advantage. That ought to let us down slow enough.
Would have been easier to let me go down hand over hand.
I'm taking no chances on you, Galt. We go down together. Here's the tuck.
I hope he has 400 pounds on the other end of this rope. If he doesn't, we'll take a fast trip to the floor.
There's only one way to find out. All right, get a hold of the rope. And no funny business. Ready?
All set.
All right. Here I come.
Are we going down awfully fast?
Too late to worry about that now.
Can't judge the distance.
All right. We're down. Don't turn loose.
Why, you think I'm crazy? That 400 pounds of flour would land right on our heads.
Joe?
Right here.
Well, I couldn't see in the dark. All right, find something to snub the rope to.
Gotcha. Doesn't seem to be anything.
We can't hang on here all night. You find something?
Yeah, the bin wall is top for the 6x6.
Tie it good.
Yeah, I'm using a slip knot. Might want to get out in a hurry.
Will a slip knot hold 400 pounds at the top?
This one will. There. All right, you can turn loose now. When you want to go up, you just pull on the tag end, and that's all there is.
All right. Here's your C. When the shooting starts, slip out that side door and get lost.
Gotcha.
Till then, keep quiet.
And is there any cramp?
All right, Galt. Now, from here on, no talking. You understand? We'll work our way through the warehouse into the offices. All right, touch my shoulder and follow me.
The section is dark.
Shh.
We'll try the next one. Folsom.
Yeah?
There's a light under that door. Look, Galt. I can't let you have the gun, but I'm going in there. If I go down, make your play.
That light's too obvious. Let's try something.
What?
There ought to be a light switch in this corridor.
There is. Right here.
You stay here. I'll break through that door. One will get you 500. The girls are in there, and Mendoza and the others will become swarming out of the dark rooms.
That's worth a try. If you're wrong, it's your neck.
I'll risk it. When I snap out the room light, flip this one on in the hall. Ready?
Go ahead.
I'll make enough noise to let them know I'm here.
Ellen!
Phil, it's a trick.
Turn around, Bonnie. It's all yours.
No! No!
Wrong boy, Mendoza.
Go! But where's Bonnie?
I'm behind you, Mendoza.
Turn off that light! Mickey! Bruno! He's in here!
Phil, get his gun!
I've got it!
There are two men outside!
I hear them. There we are, Pat. As soon as they run that corner. Try again, Mickey! Ah!
Bonnie. Oh, Bonnie.
It's all right. It's all over, Pat. Bruno got me in the shoulder, but I got him dead center. All right, you can come out now.
Phil, are you all right?
Not a scratch.
All right, Galt. Drop it.
Oh, no.
Sorry, Galt. I hate to do this, but...
Bonnie. He saved my life.
I know, but it's him or me. He knows too much.
You can give yourself up and be safe.
I'll never be safe. I'll have a better chance with him gone, though. All right, come on. Move back down that hall.
Bonnie. I've never believed all the things they said about you.
Quiet, Pat.
I've never believed them, Bonnie. Please. Please don't make them come true.
Keep moving.
Folsom, you're not in over your head yet. All they can prove is attempted manslaughter. That may mean a few years, but this means the hot seat.
Turn left out in the warehouse.
He's right, Bonnie. Give yourself up. I'll wait for you.
Snap on those lights, Cole.
Phil, what's he going to do?
Look up at the roof. Dangling on the end of that rope.
They look like bags of flour.
400 pounds of flour to the ounce.
But I don't understand.
See that rope snubbed to the cribbing on the floor? Put a loop around my neck, pull that slip knot, and I'll break my neck against the roof.
Bonnie, you wouldn't do that.
I got to. But that's far enough. Stand right there. Pat, there's a noose in the end of that slack rope. Put it around their necks.
Leave Ellen out of this.
No. Bonnie, you can't do this.
Do as I say! That flower will give you a quick trip up to eternity, Gore.
Bonnie, I can't.
Oh, then give it to me and I'll do it.
You're really going through with this.
What do you think? All right, toss me the rope.
Mr. Galt.
Yes?
I'm tossing him the rope.
You fool, not over my head.
Thanks for the warning.
Yes! Pat, no! Don't do it! No! 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 No!
How awful.
It was what he planned for us, Ellen.
But how did the rope come untied?
It was a slip knot, Ellen. In some ways, I don't know how it accidentally came loose.
No, Mr. Galt. I untied it.
Come on, Ellen. Let's get her down to the police station where she'll be safe.
Phil? Ages ago, before this horrible day was half over, you mentioned that you were a schmutz. schmutzen?
Huh? Oh, so I did, Ellen, so I did.
Well, what is a schmutzen?
Well, when you find a schmutzen, according to Mendoza, there's only one way to treat it. Here, stand up and I'll show you.
All right.
First, you seize the schmutzen firmly here and here, and then you... Oh! Hey! Oh! Oh! Oh!
Oh, Phil, I didn't mean to hurt you. Oh, darn. Let it ring.
I can't. That's my private line to the syndicate. Now, shh.
Central City.
Where have you been, Central City? We've been trying to reach you for more than an hour.
I was away on business.
Your only business is the syndicate. You slipped up on this, Central City. Mendoza and Folsom were both killed less than an hour ago.
I know that. The police are holding Patricia Folsom in protective custody.
We have no further interest in her. But a word of warning to you. Watch yourself. Your district is becoming a headache.
I'll try and do better.
See that you do. For further instructions, call Dallas at midnight.
Dallas at midnight. The Whisperer.
The Whisperer, on Tuned to Yesterday from September 16th, 1951 on NBC. A couple of weeks later, the show would wrap up its 13-episode run, and almost a shame, as the next broadcast had the syndicate order the Whisperer, better known as Lawyer Philip Gault, to murder a lawyer named Philip Gault himself, so the stories were really getting good. And we hope you join us again for good stories on Tuned to Yesterday from Radio's Past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.